What do you guys want to talk about?
I listened to the one from last Sunday or last Bible study, and that was super good. I liked the where somebody said it, probably you or somebody, I don't know, about you have to allow or to have somebody, how do you say it, like the trust where you have to, you have to let God almost convince you that he's going to never do anything, any harm to you. And I think that played a lot because I've been kind of struggling with how to be a better step-parent to Tristan. And the way you said it about just convincing, it's almost like me, I have to convince him, and not in a bad way, like I need his acknowledgement, but it's like if I just pursue convincing him and letting him know, like, I'm not going to do anything, I'm not here to make his life miserable, he's more willing to, I guess, be open and be a free child.
Yeah. That's great.
And it's actually a normal thing for him to want to scrutinize the integrity in your heart. Because we have a tendency to think, especially in an adult parent child, oh, they're just rebellious.
Yeah.
That's actually a normal thing going on in the heart where they're seeking to be persuaded that your heart's only got integrity towards them. And as they become persuaded, and you just be you, because your heart is full of integrity. That's a beautiful thing. God's not like this heavy burden. I got to persuade them that I'll only be good to them. No, that's who he is. So he just gets to be himself. And so same thing with you. Your heart's full of integrity towards Tristan.
But you saying that is like sometimes I find myself not being myself because I'm like, well, I have
to. Prove it.
It's almost like, don't you see? Like, I'm trying to do great things for you. Like, why don't you see this? And then you just, you stay in your room all day or you do this and do that. So I'm like, but listening that and kind of, once I do start being myself, I do find there is a difference. But then I get overwhelmed and I'm like, I revert back to the works probably.
You can get frustrated because you want to have this intimacy. You think you've done what is needed for there to be intimacy, and then you don't think it's there, and you become frustrated.
Yeah.
And so there's no shame in that. But God would come and ask you, well, Joe, why is it that you are full of integrity towards Tristan's life? Is it for his benefit or for yours?
Right.
So are you trying to gain something for yourself? Or are you just seeking the good of his life? And I think that you are only seeking the good of his life, but sometimes the world could get us caught up in filtering other people's reactions through ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right? How old is Tristan now?
17.
Man, he's trying to sort out a whole lot of stuff.
I'm going to tell you, men in the house together with teenage boys, it's hard.
Yeah.
That is a difficult time because they're trying to get to their space and you still need your space, and it's hard.
It is difficult. He's trying to sort life out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Especially now.
God always asks me that because, listen, you think I don't get frustrated sometimes when I think that I've, like, explained something over and over again and I explained it perfectly, and then, like, somebody is just, like, arguing with me about it nonstop? You think I don't get frustrated? And what I realize is I'm filtering their reaction through myself. And that's when I'm frustrated. And the way God stops that for me is he takes me back to, well, Greg, why are you doing what you're doing? Is it for the good of your life or for the good of their life?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. So once he gets my eyes off of me doing it so that I could have peace and that them getting it, right? Then I start realizing, well, what could be going on in them? Maybe this is a normal reaction for them. Maybe this is a normal growing process. Oh, yeah, I seem to remember shaking my fist at God over and over and over and over and over again for many years.
Yeah.
I remember clearly. And so then it takes you back, right? It's like sometimes we could want to see the good thing manifest so badly that we begin to judge ourselves and other people by whether we see it manifesting, right? So if I'm all the time preaching and I'm all the time wanting to see people set free and I see someone that is struggling all the time, right, for years and years and years, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to start to judge myself. What's wrong with how I'm preaching that they're still there? The next thing what will happen is the serpent will get me to judge them. What's wrong with their hearing that they're still there?
Yeah.
Right? And then God will come and say, hey, Greg, how about we judge you and them by what we see in Jesus instead of the knowledge of good and evil? Right? So don't judge how... efficient or how effective your word is by what you see going on in their life right now, because you don't know what's going on in their heart, and you don't know what needs to be unwound, and you don't know all the different ways the world has come against them. And Greg, how about you don't judge yourself by what you see going on, right?
Yeah.
And so what happens is it removes the judgments. And so, like for you, the voice of the stranger would come in and be like, what's going on here? Look, he's still not trusting you. Have you done enough? See, now you're judging yourself, which is probably, you're like me. You probably would first judge yourself. And then after a while, you'd be like, what's wrong with him? That he won't, that he doesn't see I love him. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because listen, that thing has played out with my wife, I know, before, right? Where I felt like I'd done loved her, like...
Nobody else.
Like, it's, like, only God could love her. And then sometimes this woman still does, do you love me? Oh. You know, and I'm like... I feel frustrated, right? But the reason I feel frustrated is because I'm taking it personally. Instead of just acknowledging, you know what? This woman is a person. And she's in a world all the time trying to tell her all types of crazy things. And so you know what? I ought not take it personally. Should she find herself in the place where she's full of doubt and she's struggling? It just means she's a human being. It just means that things in the world can impact her. And that's okay. Because at the end of the day, I just love her. I really love her, right? And so there's no shame in feeling frustrated, right? But you don't want your life to be shaped by that frustration. You want those judgments to be removed, right? If Becky was struggling to think that I loved her, if she had a period of doubt, man, I would take it personally and I would think, I can't do anymore. You know, next thing you know where that goes next? I'll never be able to do enough. Do you think that causes fond feelings towards the other person? No. Right? And so then God will come and lift that judgment off and say, listen, man, it's got nothing to do with whether you're loving her right or not. Neither does it have something to do with whether she's receiving your love right. Maybe you're just in an imperfect world and you can both have struggles sometimes. Right? And he comes and lifts the judgment off. And then what happens is it's funny. Nothing's actually changed. But when the judgments get lifted off, man, you got that sparkle in your eye again for her. Wow, she's nice. You know?
You know what? That conversation is so important. The conversation either between you and God or you and the person that you're... Because everything can just be like a cloud over you. And once that conversation, like you said, nothing really changed, but everything is okay.
Yeah.
It's hugely important to have the conversation.
I mean, we've talked about this so much that the shame's been removed. So I'm just going to say this for myself as blatantly as it was, because I don't feel ashamed in the day I'm thinking wrong no more. But what I realized is that I was busy trying to get something out of how I loved her instead of just loving her for her, right? It wasn't like I was loving her for the good of her life. I was thinking about the good of my life. And if I can love her well enough, then she'll accept me as a good man, right? I was trying to find the evidence that I was a good husband or I was a good man by whether or not she looked like she felt loved. So who am I loving you for, me or her? Right? Now listen, that's like, ooh. When God come and ask you that kind of thing, it's like, ooh. Because really, if I'm only loving her because I care about her life, then in the day she finds herself in doubt about my love, doesn't me caring about her life look like me feeling compassion for her, that she would be in that place instead of frustration for me?
Yeah.
Right? And there's no shame in that. But that's how the way of the world thinks, right? And man, I got to tell you, I found myself in that place a lot of times with Becky the first 10 years, right? Because there was a process of being persuaded that, you know, we could just give ourselves over into each other's arms, that each of us actually only has nothing but good in our hearts. Right? Because the world will program you to think the people around you do not have good in their hearts towards you. And even once you get married, your spouse messes up or they do something wrong, or maybe they're inconsiderate that week, or maybe they're selfish that month. Maybe they're having a hard time. We immediately look at it as if there's malice in their heart towards us. Look what they're doing to us. Instead of thinking, man, maybe they're having a rough go of it. And this doesn't mean that they're not full of integrity towards me, right? And that's when you can come alongside one another and walk with each other and be a help to each other, like it says in the garden, right? Where God said it's not good for man to be alone, right? And Eve was given to Adam as a helpmate. It doesn't mean to clean up the house and to cook him food and stuff. It didn't mean that she was there to serve him. It meant that they could walk together to be a comfort to each other by reminding each other of the truth, not despising one another. In the day, one of them needs to be reminded, right? That kind of a thing. But that's a difficult thing in relationships. And I could say it's been I don't say it has to be a process, but I know for me, man, God had to sit with me a lot and talk to me. But I can tell you, man, after all these years, I can see the fruit of him unwinding that way of thinking, right? And the moment I feel pain in a relationship with somebody, it's like the first thing I used to hear in my heart was, what the hell's wrong with them that they're doing this? That's the first thing I used to hear. Now what I hear is God saying, Greg, what's going on in you that you feel so upset? Right? I used to think the pain I felt was without, and it was on account of that person and the way they're behaving. Well, God flipped the script and was like, well, Greg, didn't Jesus say the kingdom of God is in your heart? Didn't say out of the heart flow the issues of life? So what's going on in you, Greg, that this is causing you pain? And see, what happens is then you can start having a conversation with God about the real hurt that you're feeling. And that's when lifelong bondages can be plucked out of your heart and you find liberty for yourself and for the people. Because, man, you can't really enjoy your relationships with people if you're all the time looking at them, looking for evidence. If you're all the time scrutinizing their behavior, looking for evidence that they're good or bad, or that they're behaving properly towards you, or they're not behaving properly towards you, you'll never be able to enjoy yourself or them, right? And so it's like God comes and removes all that away, and then you can actually enjoy the people in your life, most specifically your spouse. I mean, we marry these people because we love them, and then we struggle to enjoy life together. Because right? Because, listen, I don't know if you guys realize it yet, but through the course of your life, each of you is going to have problems. Each of you are just trying to sort it out sometimes. Sometimes you're just drowning trying to get through each day, right? And if we're all the time looking at each other, judging one another by those hard times, listen, man, we're going to end up imputing the pain we feel to one another. Instead of just saying, you know what? Maybe they haven't been mindful this week. Maybe they have been consumed in their own thoughts. Maybe they've even laid some of that on me. But man, maybe they're just having a hard time. And maybe it doesn't mean some negative word about their person or who they are or whether or not we can be together. Do you see what I'm saying? Because the serpent's right there like, what does it mean? What's going on? Right? And he immediately is trying to get us to make an unrighteous conclusion about the people in our lives. That's what he's after. He knows we're going to see evidence. I mean, the people that have been married here, I mean, Lacey, you were in a relationship also, so you could get this. You're going to find evidence that the other person's fallen short. I promise you. You will find it. I don't care how good they are. And so you will find evidence that the people involved in your life have failed you and have fallen short. Right? And the serpent's going to be there trying to convince you that they're an SOB. And man, that's not a nice way to live. It's not a blessed life, right? Like I love what 1 Corinthians 13 says about love. It says that love keeps no record of the wrongs committed against it. Mm-hmm. Love keeps no record of the wrongs committed against it. Now that's describing God. So that's not like you need to go work that out. But when you see that God, that his life, that there's something about God where he doesn't keep a record of the wrongs people commit against him, what it's designed to do is cause you to interact with God and say, how do you do that? Because I feel every time someone hurts me, I find that I'm laying it to their account. And you just say to him, how do you sort that out? And you say, I would love for you to give birth to that in me. And you just start talking with him. It's not, well, we see God does this and now we got to do it. No. It's it. In God is this thing where he keeps no record of the wrongs committed against him, that he prefers other people's lives over his own. What that means is that when you nail God to a tree, he's not busy thinking about the harm that's coming to him. He's thinking that the people who are nailing him to a tree are being harmed. Now that's designed to confound your mind to where you say, I can't do that. And God would say, amen. Can I do it for you though? And then, well, how are you going to sort that out? Now, let me tell you. Right? And then God starts sitting with you, like around a campfire, ministering to you, reasoning with you, giving birth to his thoughts in you, giving birth to his life in you. And next thing you know, you start seeing life through the eyes of God instead of the eyes of the world. Right? And it's just born in you to the degree that after it happens, you look back and you think, I don't even know how that happened. It's like the parable of the sower sowing the seed. It says he went to bed day and night, day and night, day and night. And then he woke up one day and he had a gigantic crop, yet he knew not how it got there. He wasn't laboring and toiling for it. Right? But yeah, that's a normal thing, man. You and I are a lot alike in a lot of ways. I'd be frustrated. Because I'm the kind of person that, like, I will pour myself out to no end, especially like up front. Like, I'm giving it all I got. Give it all you got. Right? I'm laying it all on the line. I'm bending over backwards. I'm laying down my life. But what I realized is I wasn't doing that freely.
Yeah.
I was doing that for a response. And when I didn't get the response, listen, I was giving it all I got with my anger. Do you see what I'm saying? So I was happy to throw myself on the ground for them. But the moment I didn't think I got like a reciprocation or it didn't have the desired effect, I was giving it all I got with my frustration with them. Now they became like an infidel, this heathen.
And that's sometimes like where I would get, but then I would get frustrated with myself. It's like, this dude's 17 years old. Why am I?
It's a poor innocent baby.
That's, and I'm not like, I mean, I'd say it's a bad way to see it, obviously, because I mean, what I'm saying is, if it didn't work, I would get pissed off, and then I would get mad at him, and then I would like, almost, I don't know, I'd like, I treat him almost as the enemy.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, days later, I'd be like, dude, what am I doing? Like, this is, and then I'd be ashamed. And then I'd be like, well, I don't even think he wants anything to do because just the way I'm doing everything or, you know, because I mean, it would almost be, I've now considered myself the enemy and that he is a good person and that I am just now wrong for him.
You're wrong for him. Listen, man, is it wrong to want to be loved back?
No, I mean,
is it wrong to want to have intimacy?
No.
Okay, so you want to make the right judgment about it. It's okay to recognize that you've gotten backed into a corner where you're viewing it wrong, but what shame is there in feeling hurt that you want to be loved back? I think it's normal that you would feel hurt. There's no shame in that. I think that that's a natural reaction, that you could want that back. You want to judge it properly, though. It's okay that I feel this frustration. It's not the frustration that's wrong. You think God didn't feel frustrated? That he was all the time loving us, and then we blamed him for killing us? Yeah. You think that he didn't feel frustrated that he couldn't have intimacy? You think that he didn't feel like an angst or a grief? That despite him laying himself out there, that we couldn't see it? And we were like, look what God's doing to us. Hating him? Like he's the source of the problem? You think that that didn't hurt him? And so I think the hurt that you feel, the frustration that you feel, I think that's a normal thing. All you want to do is connect with God about the way you're judging that, right? It's not abnormal that you would feel that way. In fact, what I want to say is, it's impossible not to feel a sting if you've poured yourself out.
And it has nothing to do with being a step-parent.
There's nothing to do
parent,
with
parent. Yeah. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter.
I feel it's relatable really to any type of relationship.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Friends. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It's everything. Spouse,
yeah,
kids.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Listen, man, I mean, my parents never did a harmful thing to me in my whole life, and I blame them for everything. Mm. And I was not kind about it. I was not. You guys hear me go off up in here? What comes out of me now is God, because God did something in me. But I used to be filled with pain. In vitriol, in anger, in lack. And the way it comes out in here, God, it came out in my house. And who do you think was the recipient of that? My parents.
And
her.
Yeah, let's just
me too.
And Michelle's like, and me too.
Yeah, I've seen some of that.
She can testify. I mean, I remember telling my dad when I was 17 that I hated them. And that they ruined my life. Looking him straight in the face. Here's a man that's never done any harm to me.
Yeah.
Giving him, laid down his life for me. Yeah. Over and over and over again. And I hate you, you know?
Yeah. And I was right. We went somewhere yesterday. And one thing I was telling, because I only told him my story of kind of the situation that he's going with his dad. I kind of have something similar. And what I was trying to get across to him was like, obviously every son, no matter what the situation is, no matter how your father treats you, you always want to be, there's always some sort of, you want acknowledgement from your father. There's always, there's just some bond that's there. No matter if your dad hits you, your dad spits on you, whatever, there's always like, you want to be loved by your father. And one thing I wanted to tell, or I told him, I was like, look, man, I know what you're feeling. Like, I still to this day deal with the same situation kind of you're dealing with, but in reality, there is only the one father that we should be striving after for acknowledgement, and that's God. You know, and that's, I mean, I know it sucks, like, when you don't get it from the person that brought you in this world, but in reality, that's the one that means the most.
It's actually the only one that means anything.
Anything, yeah.
Right? What did Jesus say? Call no man on earth your father, for you have one father in heaven. Right? He wasn't saying that you don't have an earthly father, and that you can't have an earthly father that can be nice, and that it's not nice if your earthly father cares about your life. But what he's saying is don't look to an earthly father for things you can only get from God. Mm-hmm. Right? And we tend to look to people, our parents, our fathers, for things we can only get from God. And then we put them in a place that they don't belong. And then we judge them. Really, we're judging them by a standard of whether or not they can be God. And if they're not as good as God, we judge them negatively. Yeah. Right? And Joe, so I mean, it sounds like you've already sorted out that it's not the kid, that it's not Tristan. But if you don't sort out that there's no unrighteousness in you because you felt frustrated, that's going to be an equally big stumbling block. So what God would want to come do is sit down next to you as you're feeling ashamed, hanging your head, thinking you got it wrong with Tristan. You would want to see God come sit down next to you and put his arm around you and say, I know, man, me too. Really, what are you ashamed of? That you love this kid so much? What are you ashamed of? That you care about his life going well? What are you ashamed of, man? Right? There's no shame in loving this kid's life and wanting to be a positive effect in his life. There's no shame in that. And that's really, if that's where you're at. And so come with the right judgment, right? And then once you get the shame lifted away, then God and you can sort out how this can best manifest in you towards Tristan, right? That's the thing. You got a lot to offer.
I think another thing too is like, because she'll say it kind of in our situation is like, yeah, as parents, we are there to help them and be there for them, but ultimately what you would say, what God really is the one that is with them. Mm-hmm. And we're not really the, I guess, the scrutinizing parent, I guess you'd say. We're just there to, you know, guide them in the right direction. And I think for me, sometimes it is kind of hard because I see how his dad abandoned him. And then, you know, there's things that are possibly going on in my life where I would be leaving. And then now I feel like I'm abandoning him. And then now he has nobody. I mean, obviously he has his mom, but I mean, a woman needs a woman figure, I feel, to be guided in life on being a, you know, a good person. And a male needs a positive male figure mm-hmm. in their life. And it's, I mean, if maybe a person doesn't know God or maybe is not willing to open that door, that I feel like if they don't have somebody to help them, they're lost.
Well, if they don't have God, they're lost anyway. So you can't compensate for God. Right? And so I don't disagree with you that it's nice, just like it was nice for Adam to have Eve to walk with. I don't disagree with you that it's nice to have people around you, but to the degree that they can point you to God. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, that's what it means to be a help to somebody else, is that you're supposed to constantly remind each other of God. And so what can easily happen when you love people so much is next thing you know, you're carrying the burden of their life. Instead of realizing God has taken the burden of their life onto himself. Right? Do you think God can overcome if you leave?
If I leave?
If you're gone. Like you just said, he doesn't.
I mean, I guess I'm like contradicting myself. I do believe that God is in control and God can help him.
Not in control, but do you think God can overcome? Because you started with a law, if you allow me that language, and a precept, which is that a male boy, child, needs a male figure in his life as a role model. You started with that precept, and now that precept is judging you, and it's tormenting you. And so what I would want to say to you is, I don't disagree that it's good for a male child to have a father figure in their life, to the degree that they would point him to God, though. And so can God overcome that, the lack? Because you've set up a dynamic where you now say Tristan's going to be at a disadvantage. That's causing you pain. And so what I would want to say to you is, can God overcome whatever disadvantage you think Tristan's going to be at should you leave?
I mean, yeah.
Can God fill your shoes?
Of course he can.
Can God be all things to Tristan that he needs in this world?
Yes.
Then what you want to do is be reminded of that with God. And so what I do is, I think it's normal you could feel pain for Tristan or concern. I think that's normal. I feel that all the time for people. What I've learned to do now is to connect with God about how he can fill all things that they need and how he is with them and how he cares for their life more than I do. And I become reminded that God is Father. And I become reminded that God has taken upon himself to father Tristan's life. And what happens is that restores my soul, right? And it helps me to be of better effect with the child or with whoever it is that I'm walking with. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, we can have worldly precepts that we could find statistics to prove. But you ever noticed how there's something called statistical anomalies? Things that just seem to buck the trend and make what looks normal like, nope, it's not. It's completely different. So I don't say that we can't look at statistics and say, you know, it's better for the child if they can have these role models and et cetera, but that doesn't always prove to be true. And really what's better for the child is for the child to be raised to know God. That's really what they need. And because God can overcome everything. And at the end of the day, whether it's through you being gone or Tristan's father being out of his life, that's just the world coming to Tristan, right? And at the end of the day, we can't keep the world from coming to our kids' lives. We can't keep the world from coming kicking down the door. And so the idea that we can get their life structured in such a way that now that's going to be the power unto them having a good life, that's not right. God's the power unto them having a good life. We can't keep the world from coming and uncovering their nakedness. We can't keep the world from coming and pointing at them and saying they lack one thing that is needed for life. But what we can do is see that God can fill all things. And that God, there's no lack in him. And that he can overcome and fill any lack, should there be lack that comes against a person's life. And so we can point people to God. And in fact, when you look in the Old Testament, that's the one thing that Moses directed the parents to do with their children. He told the parents to teach the children that it was by strength of God's hand, not strength of their own hand, that they were led out of Egypt and that they had this land. And that they didn't have to build the homes or build the buildings or plant the vineyards. That God himself had done that. That they were reaping where they did not sow. That was the one thing that Moses instructed the parents to teach the kids. God. Right? Proverbs comes and says, teach a child in the way they should go, and they will come back to it in return. I mean, listen, by the time I was 12 years old, I was ODing in a hospital bed, dying. Right? Flatlining over and over from a drug overdose. You think my parents taught me that? No way, man. My mom can't even drink a beer. Where did I learn that from? My pain, right? I mean, I was a drug dealer. I was a brawler. I was a drunkard. The only thing I wasn't was a womanizer because I cared more about getting high than chasing girls. I just didn't find the comfort I needed from my pain in women, right? I needed like numbness. Right? But my parents all the time taught me about God. All the time growing up. And what happened was, even though it looked like I was in the pit, even though it looked like my life was suffering destruction and I was going to die, and that was it. It's a lost cause. Man, the knowledge that my parents gave me of God, eventually that led me out of it. Right? Because in the midst of all the pain, I'm talking with God. So sometimes your kids' lives can look ugly. In fact, my dad thought about killing himself every day on the way to work because I wasn't the only one whose life looked ugly. All of us, our lives looked ugly. And my poor dad going over the twin span every day thinking I'd just take the van off the bridge and commit suicide. Because he'd look at our lives and think, what's happening? And there's five of us, so that's a lot of destruction. And what he said God told him to do, they had this rat's nest piece of the property over there where rats were actually at. And God told my dad to go clear that all out and to plant five flowers. And he said, when you come home from work and you want to know how it's going with your kid's life, go out there and look at those flowers. Don't look at what's happening in them. And that's what got him through. Right? And so that's the most powerful thing you could teach their kids. And I try, I think my parents can see it now. They did the one thing that was needful for me. Right? They declared God. And that was the one thing that was needful. Even if it didn't look like I responded. Even if it looked like I rejected it all. And God, he said, he must be godless. Look at him. Right? And so that's the one thing, man, that can overcome all disadvantages that a person can encounter in this world. But God. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting how we will judge things differently. Because I hear you talking about this thing with Tristan, and I feel how nice it is that you love this kid so much. Yeah, totally. And you're busy judging yourself all negatively, you know? Because you're like me. You're still trying to sort out, man, I got it wrong. I'm laying this burden on this boy. But it's a beautiful thing that you love him that much that it bothers you, you know?
Yeah.
That's a God character. That means you're like God. God would be like, yeah, you're like me, man. It just means you're like God. That's all that means. Okay, I'm like God. This love I feel is on account of this is the love God feels. And now let me talk with God because he's my father about how he sorts it out. Right? Just like you can give Tristan advice. And you can talk to him about things you've encountered because you've encountered it and he hasn't yet. Man, God has lived through all this. And we're experiencing things God has experienced. That's one of the beauties of seeing yourself in the face of God. You realize he knows. We have this thing about God where like he's some distant creature and the different emotions and the different pain and the different things that we can go through, he's never gone through. And so how are we going to talk with him about it? Well, that's a lie, man. The Bible says that God put on human flesh in the person of Jesus. And it says that he tasted every single ounce of weakness that we ever felt. And so he knows exactly what that feels like. The angst. He knows what it feels like to love a son or a daughter with everything he's got and have them reject him and have them think he's the enemy. He knows that frustration. He knows the way it feels should destruction come to the child because of that. And so, man, we have wonderful counselor. One of the things it says about Jesus being born into the earth, Emmanuel, Prince of Peace, Everlasting Father, Wonderful Counselor. You can't receive counsel from somebody if you don't think they know. And that's what the devil wants to get us, separated in our minds, isolated. What's going on in us is some evil, dark thing. God could never know. And in fact, we ought to be ashamed. Ashamed means we got to cover that up. We ain't gonna talk with him about it. He don't know. Or God would come and be like, I felt that same thing, man. Right? And then he says, let me show you how to think about that feeling. Because that's all we need. It's not the feeling that's evil. It's what we think about the feeling. And so God's like, let me show you what I thought about that feeling. Let me show you how I saw that. Because that will be unto liberty for you. Right? That's a normal thing, man.
I was talking to my mom the other day. And I was like, man, I don't know. This whole parent thing, this thing is crazy. Like this... She was my friend, but I was like, man, this shit is hard, dude. I was like, this shit ain't easy, man. And she's like, yeah, it ain't. She goes, but when you love somebody, it doesn't matter.
What are you going to do?
I was like, damn.
You can't deny yourself.
I was like, why you got to be so right, mom? What's up with that?
Oh, now she's feeling justified. I knew when the day would come. I won't give my parents that satisfaction. I didn't have any kids. No, listen, God bless you guys that raise children, man, because that is a difficult, difficult thing. and looking at someone that you see your face in them and wanting what's best for their life and seeing all the things in the world that can harm their life and what that can do to your mind and your heart, man, God bless you guys. I pray for the people that raise kids daily. I mean, Jade, she's messaging me nonstop from the hospital because she just gave birth and it looks like there was issues with the baby, that maybe the baby's brain is bleeding inappropriately and it's got neurology problems and not breathing right and it's in the ICU. And the grief I felt in my heart, you know, on my own, but then for her, because she wouldn't even know how to hold the baby yet. And I'm just thinking about what you would feel as the mother and the father of that baby, to know that baby is separated from you and that baby is in trouble and hurting and you can't do anything and you can't, you know? I just, man, it made me cry. And all I did was, you know what I did in that place? I connected with God because he's Father. And I started talking with God about how his ability to comfort that baby is not shortened by whether or not Jade could be with that baby or not. And I started talking with God that baby's age and that baby's brain development plays no role in God's ability to manifest himself in that baby's heart. And I started talking with God about how he's with that baby and his hand is upon that baby and how that baby see him with him in that ICU. And I just started connecting with God about who he is. And it restored the peace. But man, yeah, that it's a difficult thing. And I described that dynamic so parents could see. The world wants you to carry the burden for your children's life. And honestly, that sounds noble, doesn't it? It sounds like the right way. Yeah. But if you take the burden of their life onto yourself, then what's going to happen is you're going to sit with the good desire, but then fear and anxiety is going to cripple your good desire. And your pure desire won't work itself out in a pure way. And so what God would want is when you feel that burden for their life, that you would connect with him about how he's carrying the burden for their life. Because then what can happen is you can find his wisdom born in you about how to nurture the child. Right?
Yeah.
And so that's the dynamic you want.
Sometimes when I do think that way, I mean, I know it's not, obviously it's not right. But sometimes I'm like, all right, God's got it. That's his, you know, that's his thing. And then I'm like, what the hell do I do? Do I just like sit here and just let God do the thing, and I'm just like, cool, man, God's got you, bro. But I know that's obviously not right, but that's what would be is for me saying God's got it is in trusting him and then just having God flow through me to him.
Right. Yeah. God will manifest in you. Yeah. It's like the verse that says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it's God who works in you both the will and the ability. And so what that said, fear and trembling means to be made still on account of beholding the beauty in somebody else. Like you're in awe of somebody. So when we start connecting with God about his ability to bring forth life and his love for the person, man, what happens is we find his life born out of us towards them. And we can be led by the peace in our heart. That word peace in the Greek means to be set at one with someone. So to be led by the peace of your heart means to be led by your knowing, your being fully persuaded of your unity with God. And what it looks like is, like Jesus would say, let us. Or it says in Genesis, let us make man. And so the way I started out my prayer for little Grayson was, I'm one with God. I'm not separate from God. I'm one with him. And that means this desire we have for that baby, we both have. And the only reason I have it is because he has it. And so the way I started off was, Father, let us comfort this baby. Right? And I'm just connecting with him about what's in his heart. And then what happens is, as you become caught up in your union with God, you'll find yourself being filled with God. And so you could have wisdom about how to walk through it. Right? And so it isn't like, who cares? Right? It's no, let me connect with him about who he is and how he's carrying the burden. And through that, should there be anything that can come out of me to be of help, that's how it's going to happen. Right? Maybe sometimes it does look like hands off. Maybe sometimes it isn't. Right? But whatever it is, you want it to be born out of your union with God. Right? And the way the devil would try to corrupt that thing is he would try and get you to pick up the burden. Right? Because you can't even carry the burden for your own life.
Yeah.
And some of you might think, well, yes, I can. Okay, well, let's put it to the test. Can you bring yourself out of the grave? Okay, then you can't carry the burden for your own life. All right. So we, fear and trembling also means to be constantly aware of your inability to carry the burden of your life or anyone else's. And so if I'm constantly aware of my inability to produce life in other people, do you know whose ability I'm going to be aware of? God's. And so in the day I see that their life needs care, what am I going to do? I'm going to connect with God. What's going to happen as I connect with God is that I'm going to be filled with God. And should there be anything that can come out of me to impact that situation in a practical way, it will have been born from above instead of born from the earth. Right? And that's what you want. But man, it's taken me my whole life to not just, first, I start to see it with my head. And then it becomes born in you. And then after it becomes born in you, you can look back and explain the whole thing, right? You can put words on it. It's taken me my whole life to see this. And I had many problems like that. Because like I said, I laid myself down for people. I just, that was already in my heart. That was a pure thing. But what the serpent got going with that was, look how they're acting back. You're not getting it in return, Greg. And then I would be like, yeah, they don't care about me. And then offense would be born. Right now, listen, the reason I laid down my life wasn't so I could get them to care back about me. The devil perverted that. The reason I laid down my life is because there was a God thing that was in me to where I preferred other people over myself and I loved them. And the serpent got that corrupted. What about your life, Greg? Well, God's got my life.
Anyone else? Besides me, I feel like.
No, that was good. It helped all of us.
Yeah, it's very good.
Well, it helped me. I need to be reminded of that stuff daily, man.
I feel like for me in my situation, like, I mean, he's my child, obviously, but I'm fully convinced that he loves me as well as him. Fully convinced. So even if he spits in my face, like, it doesn't change me.
Mm.
Like, I go in there and I just still love him, you know. And so it doesn't, none of his behavior, I guess, dictates me being convinced otherwise. Like, I have no doubt. I mean, he 100% loves me. And so whether he shows it or he doesn't show it, it doesn't change the way that I respond, I guess.
That's good. Full persuasion is a beautiful thing. Yeah. And to point out, that just sounds nice on the surface, but the way that full persuasion will work itself out is in the day Tristan does something that could be harmful to her, she won't be thinking about the harm that came to her. She'll be thinking of the harm that's happening in him. And that's how she would be able to actually be of help to him. Because if her mind is filled with the harm that Tristan did to her, she's gonna be completely blind to the harm that's coming to him. And then she won't be able to help at all. You know why Jesus could help us when we were nailing him to a tree? Because he wasn't thinking about the harm that was coming to him. Right? And so he had eyes open to see the harm that was happening to us. And he saw it clearly. And then he was able to do the one thing that could actually help us. Do you know what was harming us? Death was harming us. Death was beating us. It says we're all our days in bondage through the fear of death. The Bible says the sting of death is sin. Death was bruising us and beating us. It was darkening our understanding, and it was bringing forth its fruit in us. And death was the taskmaster and the slave master that was bringing forth that anger and that hatred and that violence in those people towards Jesus. Now, Jesus wasn't busy worrying about his own harm or the harm that was coming to him. He was thinking of those people. And because he was thinking of those people, his eyes could see that death was the problem. Death was bruising and beating these people. Well, what would be the one thing that could deliver these people from the death that's reigning over them is if he could die away their death. And so he doesn't lift one finger. Father, into your hands I commit my life. Let us forgive them, for they know not what they do. Forgive means to send away. It doesn't mean don't be angry with them anymore. That's our cultural understanding. Forgive means to divorce. Jesus was saying, let us divorce them from the death that is bringing this forth in them. Because he could see what the problem was. And sure enough, the moment he said, it is finished, what happened? The veil was torn from top to bottom. The veil had the cherubims on it that was guarding the tree of life from people, because people had become joined to death. So when Jesus said, "It is finished," and the veil was torn, it was the declaration that the death that was beating us and bruising us had been sent away from us now. And we were divorced from it, and we were free to be joined together with God in his life. But he had to first have eyes to see that full persuasion. And that's the most beautiful thing you can have with, that's the, just to put our human thoughts on it, because we want to be effective in the lives of the people we love. That's the way you can be the most effective, because that's actually the only way you could ever have eyes to discern the harm that could be happening to your child, mm-hmm. right? Is if you don't judge his behavior as a word about whether or not he loves you. Because then you won't be thinking of the harm that comes to you. You'll be thinking, if he spit in your face, like you say, you'll be thinking of what's going on in my boy, mm-hmm. that this is coming out of him. Mm-hmm. And that's your first ability to be able to be of help, right? Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful God dynamic. And with humans, it's impossible. But with God, all things are possible. Right? We can't do that on our own. But I promise you, God is really able to do it. We see it in Jesus. Every beautiful thing you see come out of Jesus, was it because he used his own ability to do this? It's because he was so caught up in his union with the Father that the Father came out of him in every situation. And he even said, when the rich young ruler came to Jesus and said, "Good master, what shall I do that I might inherit eternal life?" Well, we all think Jesus is good, don't we? What would Jesus say? There's one who's good. And he pointed to God. You know what he's saying there? Don't think that what you see coming out of me is because of my ability. Don't think it's because I looked at this and I was able to get it right. No, no, no. It's the Father. I'm going to talk about it today, but Jesus says in John 12 that if you see me, you haven't seen me. If you believe on me, you're not believing on me. It's not about me. It's not about you seeing me or you believing on me. What it's about is you, in seeing me, can see the Father. And you seeing the Father in me, you find yourself believing on the Father. The commandment the Father has given me isn't to come and tell you a bunch of thou shalt and thou shalt nots. The commandment God has given to me is to come and make him known in the world. And so everything you see coming out of me, it's the Father. That's why Jesus would say, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Philip come and said, I think in John 15, just show us the Father and we'll be happy. And Jesus is like, you think Jesus wasn't frustrated? What is it? Philip, how long must I be with you? Yeah. I mean, you think that don't sound like frustration?
Sound like Job.
Right? How long must I be with you, Philip? If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And so, yeah, that's the point, man. That's why he's called Father. He's the source of everything that's good. And so in the day, I think something is good, or I think I don't see what is good coming out of me. It's not what's wrong with me. I can't produce it myself, just as much as Adam couldn't clothe himself. But I see that God has this in himself. And since he's Father, I can connect with him, and he could father that life in me. Hallelujah. And then I get to enjoy a blessed life. It's not a nice life when you're busy walking around imputing everybody's transgressions to him. It doesn't feel nice. I promise you, you never feel at peace. I mean, listen, just driving around in the city, it doesn't feel nice when I get angry with everybody because they don't know how to drive. It's not like I see them driving bad and then I lay that to their account and I feel great peace. No, man, my blood pressure goes up. The veins start popping out, man. I'm going to go crazy. It doesn't feel nice. That's a cursed life. And so God's like, it's such a blessed life. It feels so good not to impute people's shortcomings or faults to them. I would like it if my kids could also know what it's like to feel that. I know, since I'm Father, I can father that same thing in them. I just got to get them to come to me and see that I've drawn near to them. And then through this powwow, it's like osmosis, right? He becomes born in you. What do they say? You become who you hang out with?
Yeah.
I mean, we say that, don't we? What do you think happens if you hang out with God?
You become more like God.
And it ain't because he tells you what to do. It's because he talks to you about what he believes. He talks to you about how he sees. And then in you understanding things, you get discernment. And I promise you, when you see life the way God sees life, you feel happy. That's all he's trying to do. He ain't trying to tell you what to do, because I promise you, God's life isn't born from a list of rules up in heaven. He doesn't wake up every day and look to the left and the right of the throne and see, oh, thou shalt love. I'm supposed to love. He doesn't say, thou shalt not kill. That means I'm not supposed to kill. No, 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 no. The life that comes out of him is born out of him based on how he views things. And so he doesn't come and say, I got to tell them what to do. He comes and says, if I can give them my eyes and they can begin to see life through the light of my eternal life, it will dispel the darkness. And they'll be able to experience my life as they walk in this world. That's what he's after. Love the gospel.
Me too.
But again, all this oomph, you see me? Man, that was hatred towards my poor parents. My God, I'm in the morning I OD'd. I'm 12 years old. I overdosed at the school Christmas dance. I was the captain of the basketball team. My dad had to sit there with a buzzer every time I flatlined and buzz the people to come in. And when they had to put charcoal down my face. They had me in a straitjacket and strapped down to the bed because they weren't sure if I'd been trying to kill myself or not because I took so much stuff. You know, the first thing I said to this guy when I wake up and see him sitting over there and he's crying and sad and he's been there all night, what the hell's your problem? That's what I said to him. Now, was it because I really didn't love my dad? No. Was it because he was really the problem? No. It's because I was trying to deal with the pain and the death that I'd encountered in this world. And I was not having a good go of it. Yeah. Right? I mean, he's on the cusp of manhood. Some could argue he is a man. Depending on what age or generation you grew up in, 17 years old. I mean, especially if you look at some of the ancient civilizations, 17 years old would thrust into manhood. And so he's got a whole lot he's trying to figure out right now, you know?
Especially in 2020.
Oh yeah. My gosh. I mean, and then you add in all that. So it isn't you. What's in you for Tristan is beautiful. And I'll just talk with God about that and how he can bring that forth, the beautiful thoughts you have. Commit it into his hands, your desire to be a help in Tristan's life. Don't just try to sort it out in your own. Have an ongoing conversation with Father about your desire, because your desire to be a help to Tristan has come from him. And
it's so sweet, his conversation with him yesterday about his own dad and everything. It was very precious.
The whole thing is sweet.
Yeah, yeah. Tristan can't help but know and be, you know, come to that place where he knows.
That's what I told him. I said, you're not going to see it now. Even if
Tristan
is definitely a, I don't want to say a prideful kid, but it'll be like 10 years from now before he ever comes and says, remember that time?
Yeah. You know, you and might be surprised on that.
Yeah, I mean,
well might be surprised. Yeah, that's a good kid.
Yeah, I just don't, he's not a talker. He's not a, you know, Mom, you're right. He's never been that person.
And I think that's where it can be difficult for me, because I am.
He is.
I'm a very like, hey, what's up, man? What's going on in your day?
Nothing. Yeah.
Let's have a heart to heart.
Yeah. Tristan is not that kid, and that's what I tell him. I'm like,
and I like go in his room.
We could ride in the car and say like three words, but I feel like I completely understand everything he just said, even though he didn't say anything.
That's good.
And that's what I tell him. I'm like, that's just our relationship. I've known him. You know, but it'll be one day he will come back and he will say it. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's not going to be right now.
Yeah, because I mean, I guess where the times I would struggle is just because I would go in there and I do this obviously because my mom did it, and looking back now,
very
I
different people than what
I truly appreciated, you know, coming in every day. Like, no matter what, at what time, if she came back home from work, she'd be like, hey, son, what's going on? How was your day? Mm-hmm. You know, 5 minutes or something. You know, sometimes it was 5 minutes, 30 minutes. And I appreciated that looking back now. So I'm like, oh, I want to do that for him, like how much it meant for me. But I go in there and it's like, hey, man, how was your day? Good.
Crickets.
What, what'd you learn today? Nothing. I'm like, man, what am I doing wrong here? Like, I'm trying to do the good thing here.
You know? What you're doing wrong is thinking, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm doing better. I mean, I'm better at it now. I mean, I'm better about it now. But there was a time where I was like, bro, what What's going on? What am I doing wrong here? Like,
and this is what also convinces me with him is that, you know, he was in the Coast Guard whenever I met him. And so Tristan has this paper that he had to fill out for school. What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be in the Coast Guard. And I'm like, it's proof right there. You know, you do impact his life. Well, then, you know, now he's not in the Coast Guard. He's in the Army. And Tristan's like, yeah, I've been talking to this Army recruiter. I think I'm going to go Army. And I'm like, come on now. Like, his dad was in the Navy. He's never once brought up the Navy. Like, that's the only branch of the military he's never said, I think I'm going to join the Navy. Uh-huh. Like, I think he would literally join any branch but the Navy. Uh-huh. Not because of his dad, but just because, like, he probably will never want to hear his dad say, oh, following in my footsteps, you know? Like, he will rebel in that sense. But it's like, anything he wants to do, literally, like, Tristan's like, I think I'm going to do that instead.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, that's your proof right there. You're making an impact without you even having to say anything. Mm. You know?
I guess because I don't hear it or see it.
That's right.
And that is...
And he needs to hear it and see it.
And that's... I need acknowledgement. And that's something that I don't know if that's a struggle or nothing, but sometimes I like the... Like the five love languages. I like verbal confirmation, is that what it is? Or verbal language or whatever.
Yeah. Words of affirmation.
Words of affirmation. Like, I like that.
Well, try and find your affirmation from God.
Yeah.
Like, God knows the reason you do this is because you love it. It gives you a buzz. And you actually want to talk to somebody about it. Someone who gets it. And you're so you want to talk with the people about it. Man, try talking with God about it.
Yeah.
And try and find affirmation that way. Right? Yeah.
And man, a lot of times teenagers just don't want to talk.
They don't.
I mean, I'm learning that now, but...
Lacey, could that be true?
They're just like, how many freaking questions are you going to ask me? Like,
I know. My favorite get about is, two, maybe three, that's it. That's
I literally it. Always ask, and I don't even think about it before I ask. And I ask him, too. I'm like, what are you thinking? And he's like, nothing. Please don't ask me. And I'm like, you are thinking something. You can't sit there and not think about something. And now he's driving, and I ask him, and he gets so mad. He's like, I'm going to put the car in park if you ask me that question. And I just laugh.
Oh, glory to God.
I know. I have a 19-year-old living with me right now, Jeremy. And I go in his room yesterday. Hadn't come out of the room all day. I walk in, and he's playing a game. I go, oh, good, you're not sleeping. No, I'm not sleeping. Like, oh, my gosh.
You didn't come out of the room. So.
I know. I thought you were in here sleeping.
Took it personally, huh?
I took it real personal that I said that. Oh, my gosh.
Glory to God.
Yes.
We've mentioned a bunch of people's names up in this.
Yes.
And you guys don't care if we post that?
Yeah, I'm cool.
You sure?
No, I'm going to send it to Tristan.
Okay.
He's not going to listen to it now, but maybe one day.